All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at a case that's really going to be interesting for all you law students out there, especially if you're, you know, in your first year and trying to wrap your head around conflicts of law.
Mm-hmm.
We're going deep on Miller Jenkins v. Miller Jenkins.
Okay.
And this case is kind of a perfect storm. It brings up parental rights, same-sex civil unions.
Yeah.
Just all the things that happen when state laws clash.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of really important issues kind of all coming together in this one case.
Yeah, it's a real-world example of
yeah.
how these legal concepts actually play out
yeah.
you know, in real people's lives.
Absolutely, and yeah. and how the interaction between state and federal law
yeah.
can really shape those outcomes,
right.
especially when you're talking about something as fundamental as the bonds between parents and children.
Yeah, so let's set the stage here. We've got Lisa Miller Jenkins and Janet Miller Jenkins.
Yep.
And they entered into a civil union in Vermont back in 2000. Now, at the time, they were actually living in Virginia, but they wanted to start a family. And in 2002, Lisa gave birth to their daughter, Isabella, via artificial insemination.
Okay.
And this is important. Janet was involved in the decision to have a child.
Yeah.
She was even part of selecting the sperm donor.
Right. So this really shows a commitment.
Yeah.
From both of them to raising a child together.
Right, a shared intention
yeah.
to create and raise a family.
Yeah, and that's going to be a really important factor as we go forward.
Exactly.
So they moved to Vermont as a family for a short time, but in 2003 they separate. And Lisa moves back to Virginia with Isabella.
Okay, so here's where things start to get a little messy.
Interesting.
Lisa files for dissolution of the civil union, and she does this in Vermont,
okay,
where the civil union was originally formed. But here's the thing. In those initial filings in Vermont, she lists Janet as a parent.
Yeah, that's a crucial detail
yeah.
because Vermont, based on that
yeah.
and recognizing their civil union, granted Janet visitation rights.
Right, so at first it seems like everyone's kind of on the same page.
Right.
But then things take a turn.
Yeah.
Lisa starts blocking Janet from seeing Isabella. And to make things even more complicated, she goes to court in Virginia and tries to get a ruling that she's the sole parent.
Okay.
And she's using Virginia law,
mm-hmm.
which at the time didn't recognize same-sex unions the same way Vermont did.
Right. So now you've got two different states coming to opposite conclusions about the same situation.
Yeah. We've got conflicting court orders.
Yeah.
From two different states.
Yeah. It's a real jurisdictional headache.
Exactly.
It's the kind of thing that keeps law students up at night.
So how do the courts even begin to untangle this mess?
Well, Vermont's pretty firm from the get-go. They're saying we have jurisdiction here. And this is where the PKPA comes in.
The Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act.
Exactly. The PKPA is like a federal referee.
Yeah.
When you have these interstate custody disputes, basically it says that the first state to properly start a custody case is the one that gets to keep making decisions.
Yeah. Okay. So in this case, Lisa filed for dissolution in custody in Vermont first.
Right.
So Vermont's the one with the continuing jurisdiction.
Right. And they issue a temporary order in June of 2004, granting Lisa physical custody of Isabella, but also making sure Janet has visitation rights, including regular phone contact.
Okay, but Lisa didn't exactly follow that order, did she?
No. After just one visit, Lisa cuts off all contact, and instead of complying with the Vermont order, she goes to court in Virginia to try and get sole custody.
And as we said, that initial Virginia court decision went in Lisa's favor.
Right. Basically ignoring what Vermont had already decided.
So Vermont's not going to take that line down.
No, they push back pretty hard. Lisa actually appeals the Vermont court's rulings, but the Vermont Supreme Court upholds the lower court's decisions, saying, no, we have jurisdiction, and Janet does have parental rights under our civil union law.
Okay, so while all this is going on in Vermont, what's happening in Virginia?
Well, things are getting pretty interesting there, too. Initially, the Virginia Circuit Court sides with Lisa, but then in 2006, the Virginia Court of Appeals steps in and reverses that decision.
Really? So why the change of heart in Virginia?
Well, the Virginia Court of Appeals recognizes a couple of big things. First, they acknowledge Vermont's jurisdiction under the PKPA, like we talked about, that federal law about which state gets to make the custody decisions.
Right. And they also bring up the full faith and credit clause.
Exactly. That's a key part of the U.S. Constitution. It basically says states have to respect the court decisions of other states. So since Vermont had a valid custody order, Virginia was legally obligated to uphold it.
Okay, so Lisa can't just shock around for a different ruling.
Right. Her move to Virginia doesn't change the fact that Vermont started this case and that they have jurisdiction under federal law.
So what does Lisa do?
Well, she tries to appeal further in Virginia, even all the way up to the Supreme Court of Virginia. But her appeals are denied.
I think part of that was because of that law of the case doctrine.
Yeah, that basically means you can't keep relitigating the same issues once a higher court has already made a ruling. So certain jurisdictional questions had already been decided by the Virginia Court of Appeals. And Lisa couldn't keep bringing those same arguments up again.
So all this time, Vermont's holding firm.
Right, they're not backing down. And they actually fine Lisa in contempt of court multiple times for refusing to follow the visitation orders.
Wow, so this drags on for years.
Yeah, it's a long legal battle. And finally, in January of 2010, the Vermont court makes a big decision. They transfer legal custody of Isabella to Janet.
Wow. So really at the heart of this whole case are two fundamental legal questions.
Right.
First, does Janet even have parental rights, considering she's not biologically related to Isabella, but was Lisa's partner in this Vermont civil union? And second, which state, Vermont or Virginia, actually has the authority, the jurisdiction, to decide custody?
Exactly. Those are the two key issues that the courts have to grapple with.
So let's dig into how the Vermont Supreme Court addressed that first question about Janet's parental rights. Because their stance on that was pretty clear.
Yeah, they were very clear on that.
They basically said that under Vermont law, partners in a civil union have the same rights and responsibilities as married couples.
Right. That includes when it comes to children. They even quoted the language from the Vermont legislature when they created civil unions, saying that the goal was legal equality between civil unions and marriage.
Wow. That's about as clear as it gets.
Yeah.
So what were some of the specific things that the Vermont Supreme Court considered when they decided that Janet did have parental rights?
Well, there were several key factors that they looked at.
Oh.
First, they pointed to the fact that Lisa and Janet had this valid legal union, this civil union in Vermont, when Isabella was born. They saw this as evidence of a shared commitment to parent together.
Right.
They also looked at the fact that both Lisa and Janet made this very intentional decision to have Isabella through artificial insemination. And the fact that Janet was actively involved in that process, choosing the donor with Lisa, was really important to the court. It showed that they both wanted to be parents. And then they pointed to the fact that Lisa herself, in those early court filings in Vermont, referred to Isabella as the biological or adoptive child of the civil union.
So she's acknowledging Janet's role as a parent.
Right, from the very beginning. And finally, they highlighted that there were no other claims to Isabella's parentage. So no one else was stepping forward saying, I should have parental rights here.
Okay, so it wasn't just about the letter of the law.
No.
It seems like the court was also thinking about the bigger picture.
Yeah, they were definitely considering the broader implications. They specifically said that if they denied Janet parental rights, just because she wasn't biologically related to Isabella, it would create this really problematic situation where children born through these assisted reproductive technologies within a legally recognized union would only have one legal parent.
And that would be a huge problem.
Right. It just wouldn't make sense from a policy standpoint.
Right. And it wouldn't be in the best interest of the child.
Exactly.
So it sounds like the Vermont Supreme Court wasn't really creating a whole new definition of parenthood here.
No, they were very clear about that. They said they were applying established legal factors that courts already use to figure out parentage.
Okay. So what were those factors?
Well, they listed several. The first one was whether there was a valid legal union between the intended parents at the time the child was born.
Yeah.
The second was the clear and mutual intent of both people to be parents, not just one of them, but both of them.
Right, a shared intention.
Exactly. And then the third one was the active participation of the non-biological parent in the child's conception, birth, and early life.
So not just being there for the birth.
Right, it's about being involved from the beginning, making decisions together, being a part of the whole process.
Okay. What were the other factors?
Well, the fourth one was whether both individuals treated the child as their own. So it's not just about legal paperwork. It's about the actual relationship.
Okay. And then the fifth factor.
The fifth one was whether there were any competing claims of parentage from other people.
So in this case, no one else was saying, hey, I should be considered a parent here. Okay. So it sounds like they were looking at the whole picture.
Yeah. They took a very holistic approach to determining Janet's parental rights.
And that makes sense given the complexity of this situation.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we talked about Janet's parental rights, but the other big issue here is jurisdiction.
Right. Which state gets to decide what happens with Isabella?
So how did the Vermont Supreme Court justify continuing to exercise jurisdiction over this case?
Well, their reasoning really comes down to the PKPA, the Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act.
Okay, and how did that apply here?
Well, like we talked about before, the PKPA is designed to prevent these jurisdictional battles in interstate child custody cases and to stop parents from just taking kids across state lines to try and get a better ruling.
Right, forum shopping.
Exactly. And the key part of the PKPA is that the state where the custody case starts generally gets to keep jurisdiction as long as that state is still the home state of the child or one of the parents.
Okay, so in this case, Lisa filed in Vermont first.
Right.
So even though she moved to Virginia with Isabella, Vermont still had the authority to make the custody decisions.
Exactly. The Vermont court was very clear about that. They said Lisa's move to Virginia didn't change the fact that Vermont had already started the case and that they had jurisdiction under federal law.
Right. And they also emphasized the full faith and credit clause.
Yeah, that clause basically forces Virginia to respect and enforce Vermont's custody orders. Lisa couldn't just ignore Vermont's ruling.
So the PKPA really played a crucial role in keeping this case in Vermont.
Absolutely. It provided that clear framework for deciding which state had jurisdiction.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. What are some of the key takeaways from Miller-Jenkins v. Miller-Jenkins?
Well, I think this case is important for a few big reasons.
Okay.
First, it's a really significant precedent for interstate custody battles involving LGBTQ plus parents, especially back in 2006, when same-sex relationships weren't recognized equally in every state.
Right. So this case shows the kinds of challenges that families faced because of these inconsistent state laws.
Exactly. And the legal hurdles they had to overcome.
Okay. What else makes this case so important?
Well, it also highlights Vermont's progressive stance on civil unions. Back in 2006, remember, they specifically said that civil unions are equal to marriage when it comes to parental rights.
Right. So Vermont was really ahead of the curve
in
recognizing the rights of same-sex couples.
Yeah. They were definitely leaders in that area.
And it really underscores how important it is to have consistent laws across different states.
Absolutely. When states have different laws, it can create so much confusion and hardship, especially for families that are already dealing with a lot.
And in some ways, this case kind of foreshadowed some of the issues that were addressed later on in Obergefell v. Hodges.
Right. The case that legalized same-sex marriage nationwide, because Miller-Jenkins really showed what happens when same-sex relationships aren't treated equally.
Right. And how that inequality can have a devastating impact on families.
Absolutely. And on children.
So the PKPA was really essential in this whole case.
Yeah, it was crucial because it provided a clear rule for deciding which state had jurisdiction. That helped prevent even more conflict and confusion.
And it also shows that you can't just pick and choose which state's laws you want to follow.
Right. You can't just cross state lines and expect a different outcome.
There are consequences for not following court orders.
Absolutely. And we saw that in this case. Lisa was held in contempt multiple times, and ultimately she lost custody of Isabella.
Right. So this case is a reminder that actions have consequences and that the legal system takes those consequences seriously.
Exactly.
So after a long and difficult legal battle, the final outcome was that Janet was awarded custody of Isabella.
That's right.
And this case is really a must read for anyone studying law.
Absolutely. It's a classic case, especially for those of you interested in family law or conflicts of law. It covers so many important legal concepts.
Like jurisdiction, parental rights, the interplay of state and federal law. And it really shows how the law impacts real people's lives.
Right. It's not just abstract principles. It's about families and children. And the decisions that courts make can have huge consequences.
Yeah. It's a powerful reminder that family law isn't just about statutes and precedents. It's about real people facing incredibly tough situations.
Absolutely.
And this case really makes you think about how family law is constantly evolving, especially when it comes to recognizing the rights of all families.
Yeah, and the role of both state and federal law in shaping those rights.
Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Miller-Jenkins v. Miller-Jenkins.
It's been a pleasure.
It's a case that definitely leaves you with a lot to think about the future of family law and the importance of ensuring legal equality for all families.
Absolutely.
Until next time, keep diving.